Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We are already seeing stunning fall color across the state, and this hour we would love to hear about your favorite spots for leaf peeping. And of course, we'll also be answering your questions. Horticulturist Cindy Haynes will join us in a few minutes. But with me now, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And you sent me some beautiful pictures this morning from your bike ride to work. I mean, we are already seeing some stunning color, aren't we?
We are. The last couple of years, I think we've been kind of here and there, but I'm getting reports. Actually, I sent a couple emails out. Usually when I do this, I send emails out on Wednesdays to ask people kind of how things are going. And throughout the state, basically from the Northwest, Northeast, down even in the southern parts, people are reporting some pretty decent fall color already.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the fact that this feels like it's ahead of schedule. Is this ahead of schedule?
Well, I think it depends what you think the schedule is. I mean, if you look at our DNR site, which I know you always put a link on, usually up in the northern part, we're usually between last part of in the second week of October, which we're getting close to the second week of October, and then it kind of goes later into October. I did talk to a friend of mine, Bob, over in the Quad Cities, who takes pictures. He lives on a bluff above the Mississippi River, and he said the intensity this year on some of the yellows and the purples of the white ash is some of the greatest intensity that he's seen in a while. But the other comment he made was he dates his pictures and he thinks he's about 8 days ahead of where he has been on a normal fall. So
if you, said,
depending on where you are.
Did you say 8 days ahead?
Yeah, he thinks he's 6 to 8 days ahead.
All right, interesting. And Mark, we're having a little bit of trouble hearing you. We've been experimenting with some new technology to try to make things more clear, and this is making it a little muddier today. So let's try moving the mic a little bit closer to your mouth, and if that doesn't work, then we'll switch over to the phone. But Mark,
how are we doing there?
That sounds a little bit better. Let's give it a try.
Okay.
Why do you think we might be ahead of schedule?
Well, again, as we always talk, it's very weather dependent, and basically we have good, basically clear days, cool nights that promotes that fall color. We've had a pretty good stint of cool nights. So I think that kind of moves things on a little bit. The other thing too is, you know, we had a lot of dry weather. When we have dry weather, we kind of worry that things will kind of turn brown and kind of phase out a little bit, and I've heard a few reports of that, but not a lot. But I think basically we've had those cool temperatures, and that kind of, especially with the maples, where we get those, we have basically fall color deals with pigments, and the green color, the chlorophyll, is what we normally have. But as the production of the chlorophyll starts to slow down, we get production of other pigments, and especially the purples. Those purple-red colors are actually produced this time of year, and they're very dependent on the weather conditions. And if we have those clear days and cool nights, basically during the day, you get a lot of sugar production. And at night, when it cools, that sugar gets trapped inside the leaf. And what they call anthocyanins get produced to give you those rich colors. So those conditions have been really good, actually, the last week and a half. So I think that's why we're seeing what we're seeing.
When we think about the dry conditions during the summer, sometimes we see leaves start to turn early, and you always tell me that that's because the trees are stressed. So when we have drought conditions, can that lead to better color because the trees are a little bit stressed out?
Well, I don't know if it necessarily leads to better, but it could be part of the earlier. So if they're already stressed, but again, I think the conditions of those basically, again, the cool nights and the clear days, that good sun, like I'm looking out the window right now, bright and blue, that's really getting the sugar production going on those trees. So again, that material gets trapped overnight. We're going to get good production of those pigments that give those colors. So I would say that the drought or the drought conditions can push things earlier. But again, the weather conditions are really going to control how vibrant those conditions are. Because again, in some cases, I'm getting a few reports that, yeah, there was good color, but the dryness is kind of making it turn bland a little bit. The other report I'm getting, believe it or not, is people are reporting that wind has had a little bit of impact on their fall color too. Like even in the last couple weeks,
they're starting to lose some leaves. Mark, I'm gonna chat with Cindy for just a moment while we get you on the phone, because you're still a little bit muddy for us. So Mark Vitash will be back in just a moment. We are talking about fall color today, and we'd love to hear from you some of your favorite places to go to enjoy fall color. And Cindy Haynes is on the line, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. You sound crystal clear. That'll teach us for trying to make things better, right?
So sorry about that.
That's all right. Cindy, we're down in southeastern Iowa, both Mark mm-hmm. and I, and seeing some pretty spectacular colors. What are things looking like in central Iowa?
It looks great on campus. Of course, the maples are really shining right now. The sugar maples and the black maples on campus are doing their things, and yellows. I think maybe we're not seeing quite as many reds as I have in the past on campus, but it is early, and it's still kind of coming in. I've also noticed in my landscape a lot of the ashes look really good because they have great yellow fall color right now. And then some of those white ashes are starting to turn that really nice, rich burgundy purple color. So fall color's happening, and I wasn't really sure it was going to happen very well this year because it's been such a weird, dry year.
Yeah, but I think
it's looking pretty good.
Weird is the word for it. Mark, you are back. How do you sound now?
I don't know. Do I sound better?
You sound great. Yes.
Good.
All right. So,
thank you.
And Mark, Cindy was just talking about not necessarily seeing some of the reds yet, although we are starting to see some reds really pop in parts of southeastern Iowa. The color progression is pretty standard year to year. Tell me a little bit about how that works.
Yeah, and I heard Cindy saying ash and a few things. Usually the progression is things like some of the first ones to turn color. Actually, one of the first things to turn color usually is the sumac in our road ditches. The sumac is one that I kind of use as an indicator that things are starting to happen along our road ditches. It's a small native shrub, and it gives us that kind of rich kind of purple red. But then we start seeing some of the yellows, especially the ash, and then cottonwood, willow, some of those species. And then black walnut is another one. And kind of a note on black walnut this year, a lot of years, if we have wet springs, which we had a wet spring this year, we usually get a disease called anthracnose on walnuts, and they kind of are bland. But I'm getting some reports, especially in northeast Iowa, that the walnuts actually look really vibrant this year. And the other thing that we kind of see is, I'm getting these reports from southern Iowa, is a lot of times you have kind of two peaks. You have kind of the yellows, and then some of the reds kind of come, and then at the very end you kind of get some of the oaks. But down in southern Iowa, talking to one of our state foresters down there, or one of our area foresters, she's seeing that it's kind of blending together. The peaks are kind of blending. So the yellows that normally start to fade when a lot of the reds and stuff come are kind of still hanging in there. So there's some unique characteristics. But so the ash, another yellow that I'm seeing right now is some of the hickories, bitternut hickory and shagbark hickory. And then obviously the sugar maples, in our native woods and in our towns, we have a lot of hybrid maples between silver and red and the red maples. And then kind of that last finisher are some of the oaks, the red oaks, the pin oaks that give us some red color, the white oaks that give us some purple. But even on my ride this morning, I saw those trying to kind of start to give a glimpse of color. And again, depending on our weather in the next 2 weeks and what you call peak, some of the folks I'm talking to, like especially up in the northern part, they're talking what they would normally call peak probably this weekend or the next couple days after. Here, we still have a lot of green. So, you know, the next week or two, depending on weather, things could take off. Hopefully they will. We need some vibrance in our lives.
Yeah, we absolutely do. And I was just looking at the DNR fall color report, which, of course, is a great place to check to see what conditions are like around the state if you're looking at making a drive. And I've tweeted out a link to that, but it's also very easy to find with a search engine. And it is saying that northeastern Iowa is likely to peak really this weekend. So it's a great time to drive up there as well. And of course, there are projections well into the future, but that is really dependent on weather. A bad storm can mess up the whole thing, right, Mark?
Right. You get some rain, and seems like we're always getting wind lately. So you get some rain and some wind, and things can really start to shake off fairly quickly and kind of start to fade. So as we always say with fall color, be prepared to leave tomorrow morning. If you hear it's good, be prepared to get on the road and go and call ahead. If you know somebody in the area, or you can call the local state park, county park, talk to their naturalists, different people, and or their rangers, and say, hey, you know, how are things looking up that way? And just be prepared to... you know, the thing we can't do, you can't say, hey, we're going to go out next Thursday and just take what we get. You can do that. But if you really want to try to chime in on things when it's really happening, sometimes you just need to call ahead and try to pinpoint when things are really peaking.
Yeah. And it looks to me, looking at the forecast, that tomorrow is just the perfect day to enjoy a whole lot of this. We'll be back.
And a number of the folks that I've talked to up in the northern part say this weekend they think should be pretty decent. And actually, one of the people that puts the prediction for northeast Iowa, his original prediction was the 5th through the 10th, but he kind of has stretched that for the next week a little bit.
So you might have a little more time.
The other day. So,
all right, we need to take
saying, especially
a break.
Up in the northern part.
We'll be back in just a second. Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. We've been talking about fall color, but of course we are here to answer your questions about the plants and trees in your life. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And if you want to share some of your tips for great places to go to enjoy fall color or tell us about the fall color in your neighborhood, give us a call, 866-780-9100. Jim is on the line in Colo. Hi, Jim.
Hi, this is Jim. My question is, my wife and I are attempting to grow vegetables, primarily salad greens and root crops, in planters in a greenhouse for the first time. And what we'd like to know is if we should be fertilizing those plants on some type of schedule. If so, how often? And should it just be a fertilizer that we would add to the irrigation water or what have you?
Right. And it kind of depends on what you're growing. So if you're using a soilless media and you're growing a really short crop like microgreens or lettuce, there's probably enough of a starter fertilizer in the mix that it's going to give you a month of coverage, so you might have plenty of time to harvest. If you're going to grow something that's a little bit longer lasting or may take a little bit longer, you can always add just a little bit of water-soluble fertilizer when you water, say maybe every 2 weeks. That should probably be sufficient, so you shouldn't have to do a lot of fertilizer, especially if you're using a soilless mix that has a starter fertilizer in it. So check the bag that you used for your soilless mix, and it often tells you if it's got that kind of starter fertilizer in it.
Very good.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Jim. I hope that works out well for you. Next up, we've got Linda in Iowa City. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
I'd like to know from Mark, what kind of conifers can be planted to replace the many dying blue spruce? And I see that some white pines are having issues. So just wanted to pick his brain.
What do you think, Mark?
That's a great question, Linda. And I hate to tell you that the list is pretty short, that because of different diseases and other insect problems, we tend to have a number of issues. Some of the trees that still do okay, I would still say in the right conditions, white pine is still actually a good conifer. They like moist, well-drained soils. They don't like it being wet, but they do okay in those conditions. Another one that has done okay is Norway spruce. It can have some issues in some situations, but it's done, in general, over the years, it's done pretty well. Another one is one called white fir or concolor fir, tends to do fairly well. And then if you don't have deer or you can protect them for deer, if you're looking for either windbreaks or a kind of a screen, there's a number of selections of arborvitae that still do pretty well. The one we tend to stay away from is the columnar varieties. Those took the 2012 kind of dry conditions pretty rough. But there's one called Northern White Cedar, which is arborvitae. It's a bigger plant, probably gets 30 feet tall, nice and green. But it's one, if you have a lot of deer, could cause some issues. Did you have any to add to that, Cindy?
No, I think that's a pretty good list. But how would you put Eastern Red Cedar on that list, the juniperus?
Well, I would. I just hesitated because everyone that listens to me on the radio gives me a hard time about Eastern Red Cedar. But I would add Eastern Red Cedar as, especially for windbreaks and wildlife plantings, is a good conifer. This time of year, they start in the winter, they'll get kind of a purplish off color that some people don't like, but they are a good species. The other thing people worry about, if they are growing apples, there is a disease called cedar apple rust, which they are the alternate host, so it's probably not something you'd want to plant close to an orchard or something like that, even though the cedars are all over the place. But Eastern Red Cedar does make a good windbreak tree. A couple other conifers I'll throw out there that are not evergreen are the larch. I actually love, has a beautiful fall color, nice crisp yellow color, does pretty well through most of Iowa, especially eastern, northern, and central, maybe not as much out in the west. They don't like super dry conditions, but good, moist, well-drained. And then another one, if you have a wetter condition, and there's some beautiful ones on the campus at Iowa State, is bald cypress. So there are some other choices. The challenge, the interesting thing with those two is they are deciduous conifers. So they're going to give you that evergreen look during the summer, and then they're going to drop all those needles come fall.
And since we're on this subject, Linda, I hope that helps you out. We have a question from Marty on the subject of arborvitae. He says, this fall, I've noticed brown patches on my arborvitae. The patches are not localized, but are scattered in different places, usually single shoots on individual trees. The patches don't seem to be associated with broken branches, and leaves do not appear to be coated by dusty, rust-like fungus. Trees with these symptoms are distributed throughout Mount Vernon, Iowa. We have two rows of arborvitae, probably the Techie variety, at our house. We planted those trees about 20 years ago when they were 5 feet tall. What causes these brown patches? This is the first year I've noticed anything like that on these trees. Can we help them?
Well, I think I actually have good news for Marty. What I wanted her to do is, him or her, Marty, I want them to look to see if those patches are on the inner portions of the branch. And throughout the region, especially in the last 2 weeks, believe it or not, evergreens or conifers also can have fall color. So the white pines and the arborvitae right now, the white pines will only hold 1 year's needles, and so their inner last year's needles are turning yellow on all the white pines. That's a normal fall activity on those. And on the arborvitae, the inner needles, I'm actually looking outside my window again on a windbreak in the parking lot, and I'm seeing a lot of interdispersed brown, but it's all in the inner portions. I mean, if you look from the outside, it looks like it's on the tips in some cases, but if you get up to the plants, it'll be on the inner portion of the branches, and that is normal fall needle drop. Now, some people will say, hey, I've never seen that before, and normally it's there every year, but it might be a little more gradual. When we do have drier conditions, though, it seems to me that it tends to be more abrupt, that one day everything looks fine and you look out the next day, it's wow, there's a big, huge color change. Sometimes when the drier conditions come up, we get that abruptness. But as long as it's on the inside, I think Marty's going to be just fine.
All right. So, and it's one of those things that once you see it and you start looking for it, you're probably going to find it in a lot of places. That's what I'm hearing you say.
I drove around a lot yesterday, which I have for about the last 8 weeks. And on all the arborvitae that I could see that inner browning. Yes.
Okay. Here is a question now from Stephen in Clarence. Hi, Stephen.
Hi. Hey, I've got some aronia berry cuttings that I've want to know if I can transplant them now or should I wait till spring?
How big are the cuttings or how well established are they?
Well, they do have roots on them, but they're not okay. Really real strong yet.
Okay. And have they been out? They've been outside, right? Or have they been inside?
Yes. Yes. Okay. They've been outside.
So you have a couple of options. If they're really small, sometimes I will just sink the pots outside and then, you know, cover them and protect them and then maybe transplant in the spring when I kind of know where I want them to be. Fall's a good time to plant as well if they have a good kind of well-established root system, even for something so small. If you're going to plant them this fall, you're going to have to kind of mark them, protect them from rabbits, and make sure that you water them well right now and maybe even into winter because they don't have the established root system of one that maybe was planted or could have been planted earlier in the year. So it's really up to you. Do you know exactly where you want to put them?
Pretty well, yeah.
Okay.
But they're not, the roots aren't really very big, so I'm kind of concerned about that.
Right. So if you're concerned, I would just plant them in the pots now. That helps protect them. Then you know where they are, and you can water them well. You can kind of mulch them well as a big group and then protect the whole group from
sure.
any kind of animal. And then I might say I would wait to actually plant them in their final spot in the spring because it would be easy to kind of lift them up in those containers and just pop them in the ground in the spring. And they might have a little bit better root system by then as well.
Very good. Thank you much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Jill is up next in Des Moines. Hi, Jill.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yep. What's your question?
I am wondering about the best timing to plant a red oak. I'm trying to find one locally near Des Moines to replace a tree we lost in the derecho, and I'm a little concerned about maybe getting late into the fall if it takes a while to locate one.
That's a great question, Jill. You can still, basically, as long as the soil temperatures are still up and you're getting a bald and burlap or a potted tree, you can still plant it this fall. But
great.
I'm just a spring guy. I love spring. I think spring is a great time to plant trees. But if you really want to try to do something this fall, I think as long as the temperatures stay in the 50s and 60s, it looks like for the next week or two, soil temperatures are still up. The thing is, if it's been dry, you'd want to water it this fall through the fall until we get some hard frost. So I think you still have time if you want, but spring is a great time too.
All right, Jill, thanks so much for your call. And Mark, would you get a growth advantage if you plant this fall, or do you think that you'll come out about even if you wait for spring?
If you do it in the next few weeks when the soil temperatures are still up, you'll probably still get a small spurt of growth, so you will get probably an advantage. But if you start getting into late October, early November, and the soil temperatures are starting to come down and we're getting pretty cold, then you kind of lose that advantage.
Okay, so the sooner the better. And this is a question from Diana in Iowa City, one I'm sure you get in a lot, Mark. Can you tell me what trees I can plant that deer won't eat?
Are there any?
Can you say that again? I didn't hear the end of that.
Can you tell me what trees I can plant that deer won't eat?
Oh, Eastern red cedar. I always come back to that. That's a great question, but you know, there's really not a lot of species. Obviously, some of the evergreens like spruce, they don't tend to like cedar. They don't tend to like, but most deciduous trees, they really love in the springtime. They love that new growth and they love to eat on those. So, you know, the biggest thing, if they're going to plant an individual tree, and there's a lot of deer, I would strongly, the thing is, if it's a deciduous tree, I would strongly encourage some type of cage, even if it's a wire cage with good post and a 3 or 4 foot diameter at a minimum, so those trees can get going. And the thing to understand is, if you're going to prune that tree up over time, once you get those branches, you know, in that 5 to 6 foot range, then eventually you can take, you know, that cage off.
The tree will outgrow the deer.
You know, if you're going to make the investment to plant something, in most cases, you're going to have to try to protect it.
And it's not a forever thing. I mean, it's a few years. Right.
No,
but
you can eventually take that cage off. Now, as you prune those deciduous trees up, then you have to go from feeding damage concern to buck rubbing concern. So in the fall, you may have to wrap, you know, starting usually in late August, early September, if you have a tree that has kind of smoother bark and is open, we tend to want to cover those with some type of tube or some type of netting or some type of small cage type thing from the fall till spring, so that the bucks don't come in and destroy those stems. I was actually on a property just the other night, and I noticed that they're already starting to get some buck rubbing on those nice clean trunks. Mm-hmm. So, but as far as the fencing and stuff, once those trees get above the deer browse, then you can take that kind of fencing off.
All right. Here's a question for you, Cindy, from Marlene. We are refurbishing the shed that my clematis trellis is attached to. The panel behind it has to be replaced. Would it hurt the plant to prune it now rather than in the spring?
Probably not. I would wait until the last possible minute, because sometimes pruning in the fall encourages some new growth. But clematis are starting to wind down, and will probably be okay. And if it does get nipped by a little bit of frost because it's sending up some new growth, it probably won't kill the clematis, especially one that's fairly well established. So wait till the last possible minute, and fingers crossed.
And here's a question from Rachel. I work at a small university, and we've been working on installing a large pollinator garden. Unfortunately, some invasive grass seed came in with some compost. It's spreading by rhizome, and pulling it is not helping. I've been thinking about spraying it with a grass herbicide. Do you have a suggestion for type and when and how to spray it? It's actively growing now.
Yeah, there are some grass only herbicides like Grass Be Gone, and some others. You know, if pulling it, because it's in a mix, and you said it's a pollinator garden, and I'm guessing there are no ornamental grasses in this pollinator garden, that might be an okay thing to do. I'm not sure how effective even the Grass Be Gone will be this late in the season, and probably something you're going to have to do again, or she's going to have to do again in the spring. So It's maybe a combination of things, pulling and a little bit of spraying and a lot of fingers crossing, too.
All right, Rachel. So
would you suggest that she try to get that identified exactly, too, though, to make sure what she has, to look at what the options may be, depending on what kind of grass it might be?
It might help it to know if it's an annual grass or perennial grass, because there's some pre-emergent herbicides that might prevent an annual grass. And so that might help, too. And if she could send some pictures or samples in, that might give us at least a head start for next year.
All right, Rachel, thanks a lot for your question. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. With me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. You can call us 866-780-9100 is the number. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation ICOR training program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa at iowapublicradio.org, or you can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Next up, we've got Mary on the line. Hi, Mary.
There. I have a quick question. I thank you very much for taking my call the last minute. I have procrastinated in transplanting both some bulbs that I received, some iris bulbs, and also some peonies. I was going to move some out of my overgrown area of peonies. Is it too late to do that, or should I wait till spring?
No, I would probably go ahead and do that, and we do it as soon as you possibly can, because like Mark was saying earlier, now's a great time for roots to kind of reestablish and grow because the soil temperatures are still warm enough. So if you can get them in the ground in the next week, water them in well, you might even kind of want to cut back the tops to kind of clean them up. The problem with iris and peonies is if we get an early frost or another early frost, you might want to think about protecting these over the winter with some extra mulch when the ground does start to freeze, because they won't have enough time to establish a really great root system, and they might have this tendency to lift. So the freezing and the thawing cycles that happen, especially in late fall and early winter, might heave anything that's not really well established up. And peonies and iris don't have a lot of weight. So sometime after Thanksgiving, maybe in December, go out and just put some mulch around them or on top of them. That helps kind of keep them in the soil. And then remove that in early spring when you start to see some new growth. So that's what I would do. I'd water it well. I'd plant them now so you don't have to try and hold them over, because that's usually a little less successful. And then mulch them heavily after Thanksgiving.
Thank you. That is encouraging. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
All right, Mary, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Phyllis is up next in Melvin. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. In June, I bought a snow fountain weeping ornamental cherry tree. It's doing well, but about the last month or 6 weeks, there's a shoot coming out of the top. That's an altogether different leaf, and the rest of it is weeping down. I wondered, should I be cutting that shoot off, or what is it?
It probably is just kind of some random shoot. Sometimes they do kind of grow up to kind of, and then curve and grow back down with some of the weeping trees. Or it could be a sucker or a water sprout. As well. I probably wouldn't prune it right now. I would wait maybe until it's dormant and when you can look at it in the whole mist of everything. Because once again, pruning right now might encourage some new growth. And this is somewhat a marginally hardy cherry as well. So I would wait.
Yeah, I hope
to
I
do
can
this.
Keep it.
So I think I would wait until February to maybe prune it out if you don't like it, especially if it's gone really wonky and doesn't kind of fit the whole habit of the sweeping cherry. But sometimes they do kind of come up just a little bit, and then they'll kind of turn down and weep as well. So you have a few months to watch it and see what it does. And
I'll
if you don't like it in
spring, it's a different looking leaf altogether. But I'll wait till spring, and I'm going to mulch it with leaves, and hopefully, I'm looking forward to seeing it flower in the spring.
Yeah, it is a beautiful. Yeah, it is a beautiful thing in flower.
I just wondered about that extra shoot. It's going straight up, where the rest of it is weeping downward. And it looks kind of weird, but I'll leave it alone till spring.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Phyllis. Next up, we've got Rick in West Des Moines. Hi, Rick.
Morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
I have several well-established, really healthy-looking azaleas and a huge hydrangea plant on the north side of my house. So they don't get a lot of direct sun in the summertime, obviously. Despite looking really great, they've never bloomed. So do I need to think about moving them where they'd get more sun, or could I add something to the soil that would encourage a bloom?
Yeah, azaleas and hydrangeas are shade-loving plants, so they often do pretty well in the shade. But on the north side, they might just have some issues with flower bud hardiness. Do you know what kind of hydrangea you have? Is it one of the blue or pink ones?
I'm trying to think the last time it bloomed. I think it was pink.
Yeah. So there are some hydrangeas that have these kind of snowball type blooms that are pink in kind of, you know, alkaline soils. They're a little bluer in more acidic soils. And those types of hydrangeas bloom on old wood. So if you have a really cold winter or if they're in a fairly exposed location, it takes them a long time. Even some of the new wood blooming ones, it takes them a long time to produce any flowers.
Should I prune that hydrangea, or should I be pruning it?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't if it's one of the pink or the blue ones. So I would just wait and see what survives in the spring and then just prune out the dead wood. So that may help a little bit. I'm also going to encourage you to think about another hydrangea like Annabelle, snowballs, or the panicle hydrangeas, because they don't have the same hardiness issue. They tend to bloom on more new wood, and they're tough as nails, and they could probably take that site a little bit better. So that might be another option.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just one real quick question. I've got a lot of real nice potted plants on my decks that have looked great all summer. I pretty religiously water and feed them, but just the last couple of weeks, many of them just completely stopped blooming. The foliage still looks very healthy, but no blooms whatsoever. And I, you know, deadhead and do everything. Is that just seasonal, or is it something else going on?
Yeah, some of it can be seasonal because the days are getting shorter and the nights are getting a little cooler. I also watch the fact that if you're fertilizing, maybe kind of slack off a little bit on the fertilizer. Sometimes too much nitrogen will prevent some potted plants from blooming as well. It could be a combination. Yeah, it could be a combination of either one of those things. If they're healthy and they're getting plenty of light, even if you bring them inside, they should continue to bloom sporadically. But now is usually the time things start to kind of say, hey, you know, it's fall. It's time for a bit of a break.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Rick. And next up, let's go to Ed on the line in Bettendorf. Hi, Ed.
Hi. Good morning. Yes, I live in town. I have about an acre of ground in Bettendorf, and the grass itself is pretty healthy. And I've never really put down fertilizer in the fall. My issue tends to be I'll get weeds in the spring. And it would seem to me, I'm just kind of wondering about the difference between putting something down in the fall or trying to double up in the spring on it. It doesn't seem like there's much value in putting something down in the fall.
Actually, sometimes in the fall, it's the best time to fertilize some, like Kentucky bluegrass lawns, because the roots will absorb it and it helps for an earlier green up in the spring, and sometimes even helps them that bluegrass from being helps it being a little more competitive, so we can outcompete some of those spring weeds. The turf grass experts tell us that we can fertilize 3 times a year, and we do a couple of split applications of fertilizer in the fall. September and October is usually the time I fertilize in the fall with just something as simple as maybe even Morlorganite. So you don't have to put on a ton of fertilizer in the fall, but that generally works really well. For weed control in the spring, you might still consider some of that weed and feed, especially if you have a lot of crabgrass, because that pre-emergent herbicide will help prevent that. But once again, the application can be small, even in the spring and again in the fall. So I wouldn't negate a fall fertilization program, because I think it actually works pretty well for a lot of home lawns.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call, Ed. And next up, we will go to Deborah in Walden. Hello, Deborah.
Good morning. I have a redbud tree. It's an eastern redbud. I've had it for about 5 years, 4 or 5 years, and it's never flowered. It's about 6 foot, maybe 7 foot tall now. I got it when it was just tiny. And this year, you could tell early that there was something wrong with it. The leaves didn't grow big. They had a funny color to them. By, I'd say, July, I knew the tree was dying, but I didn't know what to do about it. I just kept, you know, it's been awful dry, so I just kept watering it. But now, in August, it starts shooting up all these little trees around the base. So I took a string, and I have my lawn mowed by a gentleman, and I didn't want him to mow over them, you know, because they were just kind of laying out on the ground from the bottom. So I tied them all up to the tree that's dead. And I'm wondering if there's any way I can keep any of those trees. I wanted to try to see who made it through the winter. And is there anything I can do to at least get a start off that tree?
Yeah, what do you think?
Cindy can disagree with me if she wants, but I think you can try to cut the top. If the tree is actually dead, you could cut part of that out and then use what's left as kind of a brace for some of those sprouts and try to see if you can keep something going. The concern is what, you know, caused the decline or death of that tree. Right. The good news, it's probably not a systemic disease or something like that, because you probably wouldn't get new shoots coming. So I think if you want to try to work with a couple of those shoots for a couple of years, try to, you know, get one or two established, and then you can start to cut that stump maybe down a little further so you can't see it. But initially, if you can use that to kind of use a cloth, some type of cloth strap or something to support it so you don't have them too tight. But I think that would be a way to at least attempt to try to keep something going.
All right. I hope that works out. And let's go next to Chad in Prairie City. Hi, Chad.
Hello. Hey, I got a quick question. I planted 2 pawpaw trees this spring, and I want to know what I need to do to help get them through the winter or even year after year. What's special about a pawpaw tree?
Who wants to tackle that one?
Go ahead, Cindy.
That sounds great. Pawpaw trees are great trees, and you're in an okay area to actually have this one. What I would suggest, if you've planted it, that you water it well this fall into winter, and then I would protect it from deer or rabbit damage, fencing like Mark was talking about earlier, and then just wait and see. I don't think you need to go through any extra efforts in winterizing it in any way or protecting it with leaves. Instead, I would just make sure that it has a good root system established, and once again, hopefully we don't have another polar vortex, and you should be okay, fingers crossed.
All right, Chad, thanks a lot for your call. And here's a question that I know Richard Giron would love to answer, but Cindy, you're going to answer it today. John in Des Moines. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
So I have a portion of my yard, maybe 250 square feet, that I don't see. Consequently, it doesn't get mowed or maintained. Can I plant Creeping Charlie as a ground cover? And then if I do, how do I control the edges so my neighbors will still like me?
Yes, I can see why Richard would love this one. You can plant Creeping Charlie. It was brought here as a ground cover. Might I suggest another ground cover instead? There are plenty of others, like bugleweed or vinca, that might be a little bit easier to control than Creeping Charlie.
Which is an invasive species.
Yeah, which is an invasive species and is really hard to control. And I don't know that you can establish a border or a barrier that's going to prevent it. I'm guessing that this particular space has some shade. So there are plenty of other shade-loving ground covers, even some woodland wildflowers that could kind of grow up through them. So you could have some nice things to view and want to go view instead of maybe Creeping Charlie.
All right.
It's a great idea. Great idea to have a ground cover there instead, but maybe Creeping Charlie isn't my first choice.
And your neighbors probably wouldn't get over it. just an observation. I've been listening to these questions for a very long time. John, good luck with that. Here's a question from James. I have an Althea plant in a pot. I raised it from a cutting. It's now about 8 inches tall and it's flowering. Can I plant it now or should I wait until spring?
If it's in a pot, you could plant it now. Once again, it needs to be planted ASAP. If it's doing well in a pot, I might actually hold on to this one in the garage or someplace that, you know, it stays cool during the winter and then plant it in the spring. Yes, I think I would. That's what I would prefer.
All right. And the last question goes to you, Mark. This is from Richard. I would like to plant a conifer. Would you choose white spruce or black-heeled spruce?
If it's between the two, I would actually pick the white spruce. They tend to have a little less disease problems than the black-heeled spruce.
All right. And I'll leave you with this thought from Jody. She says, I've had good luck with preventing deer rub on my trees by hanging Irish Spring bar soap on the lower limbs. I buy little net bags used at weddings and cut a bar of Irish Spring with an electric knife in half or thirds. As long as I get new bags hung by late September, they have stayed away. So I don't have the scientific proof to back that one up, but it might be something to try. Mark Vitosh, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for the opportunity.
And Cindy Haynes, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
Mark Vitosh is DNR Forester. And of course, you can follow along with Fall Color on the DNR's website. They have a Fall Color report every week. I've tweeted out a link to that as well. And Cindy Haynes is Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. I hope everybody gets a chance to get out and enjoy some of this fall color this weekend. I'm Charity Nevy. This is Talk of Iowa.